The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, the finance minister has been warned that house prices will rise due to a supply shortage, while log cabin owners hear they may face an extra property tax, and Ireland's first co-housing project for middle-agers is unveiled. I'm joined by Carl Dieter, founder of onlineapplication.com, Dr. Lorcan Sir, senior lecturer at TU Dublin, and Barbara Scully, broadcaster and author. Good morning, one and all. Lorcan, we'll start with you first. Good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, a number of things about the log cabins. The property tax idea, obviously you're supposed to give an estimate of what your property is worth. If you add value to it, you're supposed to pay more tax on it.
Well, that's exactly the principle, Pat. Now, the tax, the valuation date is still back in 2021, so people value their property as what it was in, I think, November 2021. But you're right. If you add an extension to your house, or you convert the attic, or in any way beautify it and make it better, which would include putting a log cabin in the back garden, if it's, it's the same as putting in a really good shed in some ways, you're adding value to the property. So therefore, it's only logical that, if your property tax is based on the value of your property, and we do it in bands, here, then your property tax is likely to increase.
Now for people who are really screwed for accommodation, maybe a small addition to the property tax on the house would be a small price to pay
for
the additional accommodation.
Yeah, absolutely, because the difference in property price, local property tax bands, isn't massive in the Irish context. And for some, it will undoubtedly provide, a solution. But I suspect, looking at the kind of lobbying and the information around this, that there's room for up to 350,000 of these in the greater Dublin area is just nonsensical, to be perfectly frank with you, Pat. I mean, it's a very niche solution for a very niche group of people, I think.
Now, the question of why it wouldn't work, the idea that you might need more sewage capacity, you might need more water capacity. But for many people, they'd be thinking, my young joxer and his girlfriend, they're already peeing and pooing in my toilet, and they're already drinking my water, and they're already using my electricity. So it's not going to make any difference at all to what house is outputting.
I don't think it's the parents that are particularly concerned about the kids doing that. It's more that Irish Water.
No, what I'm saying is they're doing it anyway. Do you know what I mean? They're in the parents' house doing it. So to give them privacy, they have a little shack out the back, and they just do it there instead. But the same stuff is going down into the sewers. The same water demand is there in the showers.
And that's absolutely true if you're not adding additional kind of human capacity. But if you're putting a unit in your back garden and saying to your kids, come back from the rental accommodation that you're currently renting somewhere else and move into my house and we'll move into the garden. If you're adding people to the total household capacity, you are going to add pressure onto the water system. And what a lot of people don't realise, Pat, is that the greater Dublin area, so Kildare, Meath and Louth and Wicklow and Dublin, is already at 99% water capacity already. So, it doesn't take much to tip it over the edge. So the idea of tens of thousands of these, I think, would probably have people in Irish Water in panic.
The idea that a developer comes along and he puts in 100 units and he has no problem getting that permission, and there's no one being sniffy about the demand of water, et cetera, that the developer will incur. That you're told, Irish Water are told, supply the water, supply the sewage, and Air Grid are told, supply the power.
Well, it's
and
not
yet if one person wants to do it, it's a problem.
Well, it's not exactly true, because local authorities will grant planning permission on the part of the reason or the rationale for granting planning permission is if there is sufficient water capacity there. And already we've seen, applications for large-scale developments being refused because there isn't water capacity either in or out. So, the clean water going in and then the sewage going out. So water capacity is a huge issue. And, it's a testament to the fact that we haven't invested in water infrastructure for so many years. It's going to become a much bigger problem,
And Lorcan, do you think there's any place for these Schomers or whatever in the back garden?
Oh, I think, like most solutions, there's room for everything. The question is, how much capacity there is. And you also have to remember that, councils need to know who's living in their area, so we need to know how many people are there so we can provide services. We don't want to see a proliferation of illegal rental units in the back garden, and we don't want to see a whole lot of people deciding to build their own and kind of half doing it, because these things, like anything to do with construction, it requires a little bit of a skill, and I reckon they're going to be a little bit more expensive than people probably think they are, you know.
Now, the supply and demand argument is one that's advanced all the time, that if we had more supply, house prices would fall. What do you say?
Yeah, well, supply obviously is a component in house prices for sure. But there's a couple of things, bigger components, like the biggest component in house prices are, you know, mortgage interest rates basically set by the ECB if they're passed on. So, you know, a 1% decrease in ECB rates or in mortgage interest rates if they're passed on leads to a 3% rise in house prices. Wages, a 1% increase in wages will lead to a 2% increase in house prices. This isn't me. This is the Bank of England and our own central bank.
So basically what you're saying is that the more money people have in their pockets through lower interest rates or through cost of living increases in their wages, the more the developers take.
Well, I'm saying the more they can borrow.
In other words, the price they actually could afford to sell houses cheaper than they do, but they don't, because they look at the cohort of people buying and they say, this is what they can afford, this is what we'll screw out of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same thing happened when Help to Buy came in. I had students working in that industry, in the house building industry, when Help to Buy came in, which is up to €30,000. And they told me straight away that their companies took the house price, the brand new houses, off the website for 24 hours and added on, say, €20,000 and put them back on. So the market will reflect. If people have greater buying capacity, the market is going to reflect that. So, you know, wages is a big part of that. Interest rates is a big part of that. And then supply. So supply isn't the silver bullet that we think it is. It's actually much more to do with ECB rates and wages.
So should the government just abandon these Help to Buy schemes? Because it's basically taking money from the taxpayer, putting it straight into the developer's pocket.
I was never in favour of Help to Buy, to be honest with you. I'm not in favour of shared equity either. I don't think they should have been brought in. I mean, if we live in a market economy, we should let the market kind of do its thing without kind of state or taxpayer funded assistance. But, you know, they're there now, and they will make the argument that an awful lot of people have bought houses on the back of that. They have, but, you know, it's their own tax that they're getting back, which is coming from the taxpayer. And we see the profits of house builders that have been released in the last 2 weeks. A lot of those profits come from the taxpayer, effectively.
Now, the final idea that's just surfaced is house sharing for the over 55s.
Yeah, so this has been going on since the 1960s. This kind of old school, you know, housing cooperative where a bunch of like-minded people get together, pool their resources, buy a site and build. And effectively what they're doing there is they're cutting out the developer and the developer's margin. So they will subcontract a builder to build something for them themselves. So they're taking out that profit element out of it. And then they make all decisions around the type of building and the running of the building and the management and maintenance. They do that all themselves internally. It works quite well in Denmark. It's also quite prevalent places like Austria. Whether a bunch of Irish people could get together and agree on things like management charges and how to run buildings, I don't know. We haven't really explored it a huge amount here. We have housing developments built, say, in the 60s and 70s by housing cooperatives, but it kind of died a good bit then in the late 1970s. But, I mean, you know, again, it's a niche idea, but I think, you know, it does work and it has potential, I think.
Okay, so the first item on the agenda is the row.
Yeah, indeed. All right. As always, the split.
Lorcan, thank you very much for joining us. Carl, the same issues with you. We'll start with the housing for the over 55s, kind of all getting together and co-oping.
Yeah, look, I have no issue with that. Work away. I just don't know that it needs a policy intervention. I think if you're over 55 and you're saying, look, my children have grown up and left, I'm here on my own, I don't have a mortgage, I'd love to live in a more appropriate accommodation around people that I might know or have common interests with, that's absolutely fine. But, you know, if you're mortgage-free in a house that is probably worth a lot of money, I don't know that it really requires anybody else to stump up to help you with that. So what I'd be saying is just go through the planning process like everyone else. Developers and the market will, you know, potentially supply the need for this kind of thing if we can let them be unconstrained. You know, Lorcan just said there himself, you know, you've got to let the market do its thing.
Yeah, but there are things about this. Suppose you have 10 individuals or 10 couples, for example, who decide they're going to build a development of 10 dwellings, which will probably be low rise because they don't want steps and stairs and all that, looking towards their futures. They put in for planning, and the first thing the council comes back and says, sorry, your density is not enough.
Well, that's more of a council issue than.
But that's what they will say. People. So you're kibosh from day one.
Like, that's an argument for densification, as opposed to saying that someone is over 55. So they are two distinct things.
But it's national policy densification.
Yes, but that's why, I mean, you're still going to have to work within the national policy. You can't just say because of my age, I want some kind of special right to not have to go.
No,
with
but the quid, isn't this a quid pro quo? That you get out of the big house and leave it there for people with growing families, etc.
And a smaller one.
And the deal is that you're allowed to kind of get round maybe some of the densification regulations in order to free up all this housing they talk about.
Yeah, so I don't know that densification was the first thing I would have thought of. And again, if it is, I think, you know, that's the rules. So, I mean, you're just going to have to live with that. But the big one tends to be the finance. People say, look, I've got this house, it's worth $1 million, but I have no money. Well, there's things you can do. You can go for a bridging type loan, and those exist in the market. If it's a case that you say, well, they're expensive. Well, expensive compared to a regular mortgage. So, yeah, you know, you're looking probably 6%, a little more sometimes. If it's a case that you say, actually, I do that, but I actually don't really have an income, so I'm asset rich and not only cash poor, but income poor. Well, then there's also types of loans offered by the likes of Spry Finance, where you can actually get a mortgage that you never pay back, but you can repay it. So that way you could have the money to get that house and then in time extinguish the former mortgage and keep the difference for yourself. And it is tax-free. One of the biggest tax breaks in this country is called PPR, Principal Private Residence Relief. And it's a huge thing. So, like, we already have a lot of things that favour people who are very well off in terms of owning massive capital sums in primary homes.
Okay, so if you do that, the problem is you've now sold effectively a share in this house, which is in a community, to a finance company. And they may then want to bring someone who's not of that age cohort into the community.
Well, what would happen there is if you did the financing that way, I think the idea would be that you sell your primary home, get your big tax-free lump sum, and then you buy this new one outright and absolutely. So you can have developments where you can choose the buyers. And it would be up to someone to say, look, we're marketing this towards people of a certain age. You've got your, you know, very low profile showers, your extra width doorways in case you ever have mobility issues, you know, appropriate lifts instead of, you know, staircase then, to the first floor.
And then you have obviously the management company with a Vita. We're not having that Carl Dieter fella in here.
That would be everyone saying that. So thankfully there's no management company that went across the nation. I'd have nowhere to go. But look, the point is, like, this is a good idea, and if it works for people, great. My only point is that I don't know that we need specific policy interventions to make it happen.
Barbara Scully, what do you say?
I'm fascinated listening to the experts. I mean, I'm not sure. First of all, aging has changed, and I think that's kind of been lost in the conversation. Like, over 55, people do not need necessarily any kind of supports, physical supports. But I do think that once you get to, I mean, I'm 63 and we're now at the stage, we've only one at home and the house is too big. We've rooms that aren't used. And we would think in the next few years, perhaps we would like to downsize. But I'm not sure that I would be comfortable going into a kind of a cooperative kind of situation with a whole lot of people of my own age. I'm a huge believer in having in mixed communities, and I would prefer to stay in a mixed community where I could hear kids playing in the garden and not just be full of a whole load of people around my own age. That's number one. But number two, I live in South Dublin, and there's been a huge amount of development in this area in the last decade, huge developments such as Cherrywood down the road. And what strikes me is that an awful lot of these new developments consist of either apartments and or three-story townhouses, neither of which are what older people want if they're thinking of downsizing. So you're right, we do need, you know, bungalows, one-story, cottagey-type places, but also with a garden, because in order to remain healthy as you get older, having a garden can be very important. Plus, a lot of older people have animals. So living in an apartment isn't going to be something that's going to suit them. So I do think that there is a policy need for government. Like, all of these developments have to put in a creche and usually a playground, which is great. But why don't they also include accommodation and housing that would be suitable for downsizers, for people like us whose kids are more or less gone, and and that would be suitable for us to live in for another 20 years?
I have a suggestion that maybe Carl might pick up, which is Tinder for homeowners. In other words, I've got my very large red brick 1930s built a house with five bedrooms, and you have a bungalow, so let's kind of get together and you pay me the difference.
The branding of a pat. You've said some wild shit to me in our time, but Tinder for homeowners, I think you've just capped it off.
But do you know what I mean? Because there was a thing when stamp duty was very high and the revenue then outlawed it, the idea that people would trade one house against another and only pay the stamp duty on the difference. Yeah. Then the revenue clamped down on that. But stamp duty is so low at the moment that it's not really an issue. So I've got a three-story house, da-da-da, you've got a bungalow, let's swap.
Even when that was possible, you were always tinkering around the edges. So this is my point, is that Irish people do have a tendency to buy a home and hold on to it. And a lot of people who might live in a home, and Barbara, actually I can ask Barbara in a second, I'll just say, Barbara, do you think one of the reasons you might want to stay in your current home, apart from the location, etc., is that any of the kids who have, you know, flown the coop have somewhere to come back to and you've got plenty of space now? I mean, that's a strong compulsion to want to hold on to it, isn't it?
It is a strong compulsion, yes. And especially since, and this is another bee in my bonnet, especially since that the there's a huge, like, I have a daughter who's 37. She emigrated during the recession because there was no jobs here. She left in 2011. She lives in Perth. She settled in Perth in Western Australia. My next daughter is 26. She left last October. She didn't leave because she couldn't get a job here or there were no jobs here. We're full employment. We've got, you know, a wealthy economy. She and thousands like her left in order to experience independence because they can't experience it here. And that's a huge motivation for them leaving. So, yes, I mean, you know, likely is they're going to come back. And I see it with friends and neighbours whose kids have left either to go abroad or to try and experience independence here. But then they come back because in order to have any chance of saving, they have to come back and live. So that
Barbara, I'm quite surprised that you say your daughter left for independence sake, because I didn't think you were the kind of person who ran the house with an iron fist.
Inside every Irish man, there is the Irish mammy. I'll tell you, even the hardest women have a golden heart in there somewhere. Barbara
I object
included.
To that. I don't go around doing all the stuff, but I do take quite a lot of interest in their doings. Uh-huh. So I think that's the kind of independence they're looking for. Get mammy's nose out of my business rather than I don't want any more of mammy's dinners.
No more sleepovers with the boyfriends.
But that question of appropriate accommodation that not everyone wants to live in an apartment. And in fact, people with an accumulation of bits and pieces from a lifetime, No storage in the modern apartments at all.
But Pat, this Barbara is telling you the case study on a micro level of why people tend not to move. You know, they tend not to move even when the house is too big because they have emotional attachments, they have a lot of possessions, they have an urge for their kids to have somewhere to come back to should they need it. So that's why maybe something like the log cabins is a better idea, because then you could actually stay in the area. And this idea that, oh, there's not the water supply, there's a lot of things around this that are a red herring because, like, A, you can't blame the failures of infrastructure to become an excuse for homelessness and housing compression. You do have to build. But say, for instance, and I'm using Barbara as an example, if she had, say, a partner, two kids, and now you're saying, oh, well, if you added a log cabin and they came back, that somehow you've added more people. You're not. You're adding the people back who were there already. It's just a different tube carrying the water into the sewer. So a lot of these things become false narratives. Even the idea of the property tax is a false narrative. Did Revenue come out and say, don't build an extension because we're going to raise your property tax? And yet that raises your value. So why is it specific to this? So basically, everyone who doesn't want something, they always find ways to poo-poo everything and scare you off from it.
Barbara?
Can I just defend myself here? The stuff and the sentimentality thing doesn't hold with me. I think I'm happy to get to a stage, if we were downsizing, to let a lot of the stuff go. And also, I'm not sentimentally attached. I mean, I like my house, but I'm not sentimentally attached to it. I would like to be able to downsize.
I made a mistake in saying it was you personally.
I just chose a bad case study. I'm not sentimental. But I do. And I mean, the thing about having a place for your kids to come home to, we could work around that. You could always hire somewhere if you needed to. So no, I don't. That wouldn't stop me if I thought that I could find something suitable. But the idea of having a cabin in my back garden in which my children would live, like, long term, is horrific for all of the reasons that have been said already. But also because, you know, I live in a regular house in a suburban estate. The access to the back garden, in my case, we have a terrace, is through the house. But I know in a lot of suburban houses, unless you're in a huge, big house, it's a very narrow passageway through your back garden. Like, I don't really want, for all the fact that I just said I like to be involved in my children's lives, I really don't want to see who's staying the night with them and what they're doing and what time they're coming in at when they get to being 30 and 40. So, you know, I think that idea is absolutely horrific.
Just get rid of the lace curtains and get blinds.
Yeah, it's not be a curtain twitcher. It'll be sorted out straight away. Look, the idea, I mean, but the log cabin could also be for you to live in and then, you know, get away from it.
I'm not going to live in a log cabin in my own garden.
I live in a log cabin, Barbara. I go up the side of a hill.
I would live in a log cabin.
Guitar, dog outside. It sounds like heaven.
Yeah, no, I would live in a log cabin, but not in my own back garden. I would like to downsize away to be my own self-contained.
Yeah. Now, there is one fundamental question that many people are asking. If I sold this 1940s nice four-bedroomed house, the money I would get would not buy me a modern A-rated newly built house.
That's not always true. Now, like, to be fair,
in Dublin, that would be true.
That's very true around here.
If you're talking about a new A-rated house, but again, like, let's just be really clear. Loads of the world live in apartments. And I mean, like, loads of the world full of octogenarians. In Japan, they have some of the highest rates of people who live to be 100, and they have a huge amount of them living in apartments. Like, if you've got good elevators, they're done well. They're not only good because they also give you an interior door, which means you still get to know your neighbours, but you're actually up off the street. So there's a lot less kind of crime risk for older people. Now, Japan has low crime rates anyway, maybe not the best example there. But I'm just saying, loads of the world live in apartments. So no, you don't get an A-rated home, but you can buy a new apartment. And that's something I think needs to be
older people,
understood.
But thinking that all older people want to live in an apartment.
You know, don't do it then. Like, no one's forcing you. But you can't complain about not having exactly what you want and not wanting what's available too.
You absolutely can.
Well, no, sorry. You can complain about anything. I'm saying in practical terms, it's just an illogical argument.
But I don't understand why developers don't include housing for older people in these huge developments that are being built when they're including creches and they're including play. Well, I have never seen them.
It's a huge theme is multi-generational. Tenancies. You see it actually with a lot of the with the newly built public housing schemes coming out, that they want a place to move, because actually some of the worst use of housing that we have in this country is in the you know, well over 100,000 homes that the state owns that are drastically underoccupied.
Yeah. But that's a political hot potato.
You can't touch that one. That's too, like, that's
sacred cow stuff. On that note, Carl Dieter, founder of onlineapplication.com and broadcaster and author Barbara Scully. I don't know which is going to set up Tinder for homeowners, but I want to be a shareholder when it comes.
We'll get Pat on the regular Tinder first and see how that works.
Great stuff. Thank you both very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.